the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Jimmy Hines along with Vince Ferrar. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. Vince, I want to ask you about this. So this was a topic that John Pennington brought up yesterday on the Sports Source. And by the way, it's a great show. It's a 90-minute show. Runs from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. And in fact, John has mentioned several times, I don't know how he packed everything into 1 hour. But now he's got 90 minutes to do it. So here's the topic. So the SEC has agreed to go to a 10-game conference schedule only this year. Now, there are some really attractive non-conference games I would like to see, but we won't see them. But by golly, if you can give me 10 games, I'll take them. But here's the question that was asked. Would you rather have 10 good conference games with the current schedule or a 12-game schedule where you have 8 conference games and 3 or 4 dud games? What would you prefer?
10 strong conference games in, if we're talking about this year with all the circumstances of this year, is that
no
the
just no going forward you going forward now you can set it up however you want, but anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. What was your proposal?
No, that was me because I wanted clarification on how you viewed it, and I'm glad you mentioned that to me. That's tougher for me, Jimmy. It's an easy decision for this year, but to your question moving forward, that's tougher for me. I think I would still probably like to have some of the non-conference matchups there as an opportunity. I like more conference games, but... it's also intriguing to be able to work some of those matchups in non-conference. Now, Tennessee has work to do from that standpoint in future Power 5 non-conference scheduling. But I like that option. You know, we don't like those bye games, but those have value to those other schools as well. As long as there's not, you know, too many of them. Then it gets to be old. So I'd say maybe the 12 games. So it, again, it's 10 games and 2 non-conference or
no, it's just 10 versus... You got a 10 game schedule, SEC games only, and or 12 game okay. schedule with 8 conference games and 4 non-conference games.
I'd still probably say more football. I would side with that, but I don't have a hard opinion on that, Jimmy. I don't more normally things are I'm more have more conviction on it, but I'm okay with either one. What about you?
I'm much in favor of the 12 game schedule, and here's why. A couple of reasons. One, as much as I love college football and you do too, the more you can give me, the better. And yes, I know that some of these bye games are blowouts. But Georgia State, Tennessee wasn't. Tennessee Air Force a few years ago wasn't. I mean, there are a lot of games where you think it's going to be one side and it's not. But taking that aside, here's the deal. When you say 10 good conference games, the SEC doesn't have good conference games every week. There are plenty of blowouts. There were games last year that were 56 to nothing, 50 to 7, 48 to 7, 51 to 10. There are plenty of blowouts. There were more than 30 SEC games last year that were decided by more than 20 points. Now, I'll acknowledge that you could have a 44-24 game and it might be somewhat entertaining, but for the most part, when you got a 20-point game, it's not really a, quote, good game to me. So there are a lot of blowouts. It's not like every game in this league. And I'm telling you, whoever plays Vanderbilt and Arkansas this year, there'll be plenty of blowouts because both of those teams stink. There will not be good games. Last year, LSU won 6 conference games by at least 21 points. Alabama won 6 by at least 21 points. Vanderbilt lost 5 by at least 25. South Carolina lost 4 by 20. So my point is that every week, every game that's played in the SEC is not a good game necessarily. Mm-hmm. So that's to me, it's a false premise that you're going to have 10 good conference games. So, and here's a part of that too. I would much rather see Alabama play. What was it? USC? Isn't that who they were going to play?
Yes, yes.
I'd rather them see them play USC than see them play Vanderbilt or Arkansas. Is it going to kill them? So that's part of my argument, because you have a lot of SEC games that are blowouts. So anyway, that was my contention.
No, and it's a very valid point, but here's just to play a little bit of devil's advocate.
You never do that, Vince. What you talking
usually
about?
I just disagree with you.
Right. Where are you coming from, devil's advocate?
Here's the thing, is when you if you were to add the two conference games and get to the 10, yes, you may have some that are duds, but you may have some that are tremendous. For example, if they do the strength of schedule model, and we'll get into that later, the specifics of it, but one of those matchups that is out there lingering that the SEC could potentially match up is an LSU-Georgia game. And that's pretty juicy. So
I agree.
You're going to have some cases where you're going to have a dud conference game, but you're also going to, in percentages, because you're adding more SEC games, you're also going to have plenty more that will work out and will be quality. And in your argument for, yes, sometimes you can't assume that the Tennessee is going to beat a Georgia State, because they did it last year. Where do the numbers play out in the percentage of time that we have upsets in those situations? Or is that that happens some, but if you look at across college football, how often those end up being blowouts versus pulling an upset, it's still a much greater percentage that a lot of people know what the outcome is, and it's not of interest to the fan going to the games in a normal year or watching them on television. So that's a little bit of a factor as well, is just that assumption and the numbers that the favorite will still win a big majority of the time.
Well, I would take it to this extent. I wouldn't just say win, because Tennessee barely beat UAB a few years ago and had to go to overtime to do it. It was a good game. It was a good competitive game. So, to me, it has to be a blowout, not just a win. I would say 90% of the time, the team that's doing the bye game wins it. But I would say you might get to 25% of the time where it ends up being a good ball game. Heck, a few years ago, Georgia Southern, I think, beat Florida or played them close. I think maybe they played Georgia close. They had that triple option that was difficult to defend. But so I'm looking at a good game, not just whether they upset them. Is it a competitive game?
You're right. And then sometimes those big marquee preseason matchups, they disappoint sometimes as well. Maybe, again, the percentages are that they are competitive and fun. But if you're going to look at instances like Georgia State beating Tennessee, you also got to look at instances like when Alabama played USC the last time in one of those season opening games. It was Jalen Hurts' career debut, where he fumbled on his first snap and Alabama just ran away from them. So there are exceptions to all of those arguments and sides, but still the numbers tell you you're going to have a bunch of those blowouts in the G5 or FCS games, and you're going to have competitive in those marquee matchups. So, you know, there are what we've thought of them to be, I think, in the full 12-game schedule.
Yeah, and so now going forward, if I change the question, would I like to see 10 conference games and 2 others? Absolutely, I would.
Yeah.
But I debate the premise that if you have a conference game, it's a good game. I mean, I even argue this, and I'll see where you are with this point, because somebody was saying, well, just make sure the SEC plays all Power Five conference opponents. That doesn't mean that much to me. It depends on who that conference opponent is.
Right.
If it's a 1-11 team, or it's a 2-10 team, so what? You played a conference team that's no good. What difference does that make? Rutgers and Kansas and Georgia Tech were sorry football teams last year. So what if you beat them? If you had played 13-1 Appalachian State, or 12-2 Boise State, or 11-2 Memphis, or 11-2 Navy, or 11-2 Air Force, that's a better win than beating a Power 5 team named Rutgers, Kansas, or Georgia Tech. So I don't really care whether you play a Power 5 opponent or not. I care who it is. I care who the Power 5 opponent is versus a group of five. Because I'll guarantee you every year there are at least 15 group of five teams that are better than Power 5 teams. So I'm not married to the premise, oh, you played a Power 5 team. No. I want to know how good was that opponent you played. How do you see that argument?
Well, and you've shared that before, and I agree with you some, and there's some variation there on just how much some, especially when you get to the FCS. We've had that argument before, but bottom of the Power Five, top of the group of five, I think that is closer. I like that argument more so than top of the FCS, bottom of the FBS, because I do think it dwindles down in at the very top of the FCS. You can drop down pretty quickly and then have a gap to the bottom of the FBS. But to your point with the G5 and the P5, Arkansas should be your poster child example of that, Jimmy, with all the losing that they have done to group of five teams, even on their home field through this horrible stretch of football we've seen from them. So there's that. Also, it's the, all right, one game versus, well, what if, you know, what if Colorado State was in the SEC? They couldn't do that. They couldn't beat an Arkansas, you know, five times out of nine or whatever. You can get into that argument as well.
Yeah.
Well, they don't need to. It's just a one-time situation. So, you know, that's an argument you often hear. So, yes, is Memphis better than an Arkansas? You know, Cincinnati last year better than, you know, than a Vanderbilt or a Rutgers for sure has lost to G5 schools? Sure. But it doesn't mean that people would want to see those games scheduled more than a conference game. And plus, there's this, it's cyclical also for some teams. Now, Vanderbilt has been bad a lot. They've had their spike ups. Rutgers has been bad a lot. But I was listening this weekend to Sirius XM. I was in the car, and they were replaying the 2008 Orange Bowl, Virginia Tech versus Kansas. It's like, wow, I forgot that Kansas used to actually be good at football back in Mike Mangino, Aqib Talib was there. So there are spike ups for some of those really bad programs. But in general, you're right. P5 doesn't always mean, or in conference doesn't always mean, the best matchups.
Well, that was the outlier for Kansas. I mean, that was a little bit like what Vanderbilt did with James Franklin.
Right.
Yeah, so you do have that situation that crops up. And look, Central Florida was 10-3 last year. That's a good football team. They're not national championship caliber, excuse me, but that's a good football team. So, and Navy has given Notre Dame fits from time to time. In fact, they've upset Notre Dame from time to time because of that triple option that they run. And Air Force has done the same with some opponents as well. So, anyway, I'm not married to the – you need to be playing Power Fives. I'm married to trying to get quality opponents. And here's the other thing, too. Some of these schedules are made 3 years in advance, 5 years in advance. Some are made 10, not many, but some are made 10 years in advance. You don't know what you're getting 10 years from now. I mean, this past year, Northwestern was 3-9. They're typically better than that.
Yep.
And in 10 years, who knows where Memphis is going to be. They may be 4-8. So it's hard to project that. But my point is this. You don't have to stay within the Power Five to have a quality non-conference opponent. So that's my point.
I'm with you, but here's some schools they try to mask behind the what maybe the record is of those schools or even their status. Like teams will target G5 schools and then G5 schools that just recently moved up to the FBS from the FCS. So they haven't established their program. And they'll schedule an FCS that isn't elite. So you're basically scheduling a couple, two, three FCS schools in essence. And you're saying, well, look That's at right. all the group of five schools we're playing. Not in who the reality of who they are actually is. And, Jimmy, when we get into the strength of schedule, you can see that even within the SEC – you can play a lighter schedule than others. Some have it much more difficult than others just within the conference. So that's to your point. They can very much vary.
Yeah, and if I'm on the college football selection committee, I don't look at how many Power 5 teams you played. I look at how good the opponents were. That's what I would look at.
I think they do, Jimmy. It sounds like that when we've talked to Bill Hancock. I think that's the message that I've gotten is they're not comparing conferences or Power Five. They're looking at the individual teams and having an opinion on those teams regardless of who they're affiliated with. And I think that's the right call.
Yeah, I do too. All right, we will get to something else next.
Did I agree with you or did I disagree with you? What's the result of this, Jimmy?
No, you agree with me. Okay. Sometimes when you agree with me, it's like 51-49 instead of 99-1.
99-1, I caught that.
99.1.
Right. But,
anyway, when we come back, we're going to talk about the Washington Post intercepting apparently some conversation with SEC players having concerns about this upcoming season, not just the Pac-12, although those were enumerated. But we'll talk a little bit about that when we come back. If you have a question or comment, if you want to join in on the scheduling discussion that we had, you can give us a call, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. With Vince Farrar, who always agrees with me, I'm Jimmy Himes. Sports Talk 99.1, the sports animal.
You know how to pass the time when you're on the job.
With 45 minutes of sports every hour.
99.1.
The Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Farrar. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. Vince, I want to talk to you about this. So Tony Barnhart, our friend, wrote a column the other day, and it was last Wednesday before the SEC announced the 10-game conference-only schedule. Members of the Conference Student Athlete Leadership Council met with the league's medical advisory board by video. Washington Post got a copy of it, wrote a story about it, quoted an unnamed SEC official as saying, quote, there are going to be outbreaks. We're going to have positive cases on every single team in the SEC. That's a given, and we can't prevent it, said an unnamed student athlete. For so much unknown in the air right now, is it worth having a football season without certainty? Close quote. Greg Sankey's response, part of our work is to bring as much certainty in the midst of this really strange time so that you can play football in the most healthy way possible with the understanding there aren't any guarantees in life. Close quote. There, as one official said, there is no way to eliminate all risk. You try to minimize the risk. Where is your confidence level that we will have a college football season that is not interrupted?
Interrupted would, to me, the way I interpret that is paused. Like, that doesn't mean games reschedule to me, if that matches how you envision interrupted. I think that I ride this wave, Jimmy. It's almost day to day where my confidence level, it's like being in a pool and, you know, people are creating waves in the other end of the pool. It's just, you know, it varies. It goes up and down. We don't know. And I don't know, and most people don't know. In terms of confidence level, to answer your question, I would still be on the barely over 50% side that we can get through this. There's times, like I asked Dr. Jerry Punch about the technology, and I think the SEC will try to do heavier testing than I would expect them to, than maybe what the lowest common denominator would be for that P5 document. I think they have to in order to get through this, honestly. To me, once a week testing, it's a recipe. And 14-day shutdowns with contact tracing, I think that's asking for a shutdown. But I don't think, the more I learn about it and the more I think about it, the more I think that college football is going to take more measures, whether it's the helmet, whether it's the contact tracing measures, the definition of extended contact with the players. I do think that there's a possibility that they can do those things better than what maybe we initially gave them credit for. I still want to know how much testing they're going to do. So it's still unknown. It's still in that 50-50 range, but I would barely side on the side of getting through the college football season. But in terms of great confidence level, Jimmy, I don't have great confidence, and I'm not one that is so anxious to be right that I'm going to hot take one side or the other. I'm as much in the dark as a lot of other people, and if you say you absolutely know, you don't know.
I've said before that I think the season will be interrupted and they won't play all the games. Now, that was before they released the 10-game schedule. I don't see it happening, and I'm basing that on part of what I've seen with Major League Baseball, the number of tests around the country, the number of spikes in the South, in the Southeast. So I don't think we will have a 10-game schedule in the SEC. Hopefully we'll be able to get in at least 8, but I don't know that. But here's another thing, too. So we've had one player that's already opted out. He's from Virginia Tech. He's projected a first-round draft pick. He's a cornerback. Do you think there will be a number of players from the SEC that opt out of playing this season? Because I do.
We've already started to see some players. I think one or two Florida players have expressed the possibility that they might opt out. I think the fact that they're seeing NFL players, guys that they know of, that are starters, that are leaving money on the table, if they're doing that, I think more and more of them are either saying to themselves, well, if they can do it, why can't I? Or they're being encouraged by people around them, whether it's family, friends, or whoever, that they should take these steps and not risk it and just prepare for, if you're good enough, prepare for the league, or just do your own, wait it out a year and then hop back in next year. Because I know the SEC has given them the opportunity to opt out without any penalty of losing scholarship or losing their status with the program. So I do think you're going to see some of it. Is it going to be widespread to where you're going to lose all your stars? I wouldn't think so. But some will make that decision. I do anticipate that.
I think you're right. I think there will be some. I think some will do it because they are projected to be high draft picks. I think some will do it because of pre-existing conditions, and they don't want to run that risk. And I don't know what Trey Smith's going to do, but I bet you he's thinking seriously about what he should do because of the blood clots. So it's an interesting dilemma that's being faced, but I do think there will be some that say no. unlike the pro ranks, where we have heard the NFL say, if you don't abide by the guidelines and you test positive and then you opt out, we ain't paying you. Well, I think in college, even if you might have some college football players or basketball players that don't do what they're supposed to do and have a positive test and opt out, I'm not sure you yank that scholarship, right? That could be a recruiting nightmare, couldn't it?
Oh yeah, the ramifications of that. I don't see those kind of things happening. No, it's different when you're talking about the professional ranks versus college. Yeah, that'll be used against you negatively in recruiting. I don't think that would fly. So I'm with you there.
Yeah. So, well, that's going to be interesting to see in that regard. All right. When we come back, we'll have more with Vince Ferrara. I'm Jimmy Himes. To join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. Sports Talk 99.1, The Sports Animal. Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Ferrara. And, Vince, there have been a couple of folks that have said, that are reporting, that Eve Pons is returning to the University of Tennessee.
Yeah, first Sean Farnham, who we outlined earlier, had tweeted that Pons was returning. Then he deleted that tweet, said that he was told that he had second thoughts. He's still leaning towards coming back. Then he retweeted just a little while ago that Eve Pons, the second thoughts are over. Eve Pons will return to Tennessee for a senior season according to his NCAA certified representation. Then Jeff Goodman retweeted him and said, "You sure this time, Farney?" Just kidding. I can confirm Sean's report that Eve Pons will return to Tennessee per sources. Now, Tennessee basketball has not put anything out on their Twitter feed to confirm that. They haven't sent out a release or anything. But so two national media members reporting that E. Pons is returning to the University of Tennessee. It just adds to how deep and good the quality is on this roster for Tennessee basketball, Jimmy. I don't remember seeing it. You go back farther than I do. I just don't remember these kind of quality options on one Tennessee basketball team.
I don't either. If I were to try to go back a long way, and this is well before I started covering Tennessee, when you had Bernard King, Ernie Grunfeld, and Mike Jackson, one year averaged like 16 points and was the third leading scorer. That's a lot of firepower. So I would say you might go back to that. I don't know that you have the depth. Well, you don't have the depth that you have on this team. Now, you might have had more star power then, because Bernard King's the greatest player in the history of Tennessee basketball, in my opinion. But I love this roster. I think they got a chance to do something really special this year with Pons back. So I like what they have. It's the best, in my opinion, it's the best roster they've had since I've covered Tennessee going back to 1985. So let's go ahead and go to the phones where Joe is our next caller. Joe, you're on Sports Talk.
Yeah, guys. You asked the question which I'd prefer in those two schedules.
Yeah.
And I think I'd prefer the 12-game schedule because I think the school benefits from the extra money as well as the other schools that come to play. And in addition, it's kind of nice to go to Knoxville and not be so worried about whether you're going to win or lose. It just makes the weekend a little more enjoyable sometimes. But I have actually another option. If it was me and I was could pick anything I wanted, I would prefer a 12-game home-and-home schedule against the East, and same thing in the West, and have a true champion, and then those two teams play in the conference championship game.
So you'd play only six SEC games?
No, I'd play home and home all the other six teams in the East. Tennessee
okay,
would play
you have
all
Florida
of them,
home
all
and home,
teams.
Georgia home and home, Vanderbilt home and home, etc. Okay, I got
correct.
You.
Yeah, and then same thing in the West. You'd have a true champion because both teams. You wouldn't be saying, "Well, I had to play Alabama or had to play Florida at home this year or away this year." you wouldn't have any excuses. You'd have a no advantage to one team or the other. You'd have a true East Division champion, a true West Division champion, and then you could go playoff for the championship in a one-game playoff.
Okay. Well, that's pretty dramatic. You don't see home and home in football.
I know you don't, but wouldn't that really make it a really even way to determine who was the best team in the East and who was the best team in the West?
But here would be a counter to that. Is you talked about how having those games where you know who's going to win, how that enhances your experience because you're not worried about the outcome. What about
correct?
What about actual the experience of being able to see some different venues in the SEC as a fan, and then also the experience of the players to where they would never get a chance to play other than a championship game, which not everyone gets to participate in. Now you're eliminating them being able to experience anyone else from the other division. Now, I know it's a slow rotation now with only one new crossover every year, but at least you get some of those. You go for 4 years, you can play four different teams in the West, you have new venues you can experience, and then fans have a new place they can go. To have it the same every single year just to because of people complaining about who the true champion is, I don't know that covers that part of it. At least that's the way I see it.
Yeah, I hear you. I just think that it would you could always add a 13th game and play one team from the other division.
Yeah, I don't know that we're going that direction. I think we're going lower, not even higher.
Let's just play 14
okay,
and play
well, given,
two from
given
the
two
division.
Choices. Yeah, given the two choices you've given me, I would rather have the 12-game schedule.
Okay. All right. Joe, we appreciate it. Let's work in Alan. Alan, you're on Sports Talk.
Oh, hey, guys. I didn't even hear
Alan.
The question, but I'll try and answer. I say get rid of Arkansas and Missouri and play two crossover games at 8 games and keep everything else the same. But I called to do some thoughts and prayers for Coach Battle that you guys announced earlier is fighting COVID. Of course, everybody knows he was Tennessee football coach. Didn't turn out to be a great one, but he was always a good man. And he went on to be extremely successful in business, licensing. I guess people probably know that. I last got to see him about 5 years ago. I took the University of Tennessee MBA case competition team down to Alabama to compete in the SEC championships. And they gave us a tour, and he was part of the tour. We went to his kind of boardroom, and he talked to us, and I went up, got a picture with him, and I reminding him of something he didn't remember, which I could understand, but he used to babysit me.
What?
It was probably his wife, but before he was head coach, I lived across the street from him on Bridgewater. And when I'd come home from school and my parents weren't there, I'd go stay at his house and play football in the front yard with him. I think he had two sons. I think one was named Patrick. And I kidded him because didn't Battle have maybe a fake punt against Georgia that went bad or something? And
yeah.
I don't know if he used to quit. I kidded him that every time I'd play football with his kids in the front yard, when it was my turn to tackle them, they'd punt on first down. But anyway, he remembered, of course, where he lived. He didn't remember me. I was always thought he's a good man, and I'm glad he's a VFL, and I hope he gets well. Obviously, he's in that age group that's, you know, a little dangerous. So let's hope he comes through good.
And with a pre-existing condition.
Yeah, the other fact about him that I don't know if everybody knows, it comes up occasionally, but correct me if I'm wrong, he was 29 years old when he was named head coach.
Okay, I'm going to trust your memory. I thought I remembered 28, but
I wouldn't
he was
I wouldn't
less
argue
than 30.
With you. I just, yeah. Yeah, he was less than 30, and you know, just think about that today. Of course, you know, it wasn't quite as big a business. It was pretty important to everybody, but it wasn't quite as big a business back then. And of course, he beat Bear Bryant his first year, and you know, had some that did pretty good. But anyway, let's hope he gets well, and best to him and his family.
Yep. Yeah, he's a great man. I've really enjoyed the visits I've had with him when he was the athletic director at Alabama. I had a chance to visit with him at the SEC spring meetings. We'd interviewed him multiple times through the years for a variety of reasons. And, yes, hopefully he does improve, and he'll be okay because he's a terrific guy, no doubt about it. Alan, we appreciate the phone call. Yep. When we come back, we'll have more with Vince Farrar. I'm Jimmy Himes. Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting.
A real woman could stop you from drinking.
It has to be a real big woman.
This is Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to Sports Talk with Vince Farrar. I'm Jimmy Himes. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. A couple of notes that are pretty tough to stomach here. First off, a New Mexico football commit, J.B. White, was killed in a shooting. He's class of 2021. The suspect has been arrested and charged. Louisiana Lafayette assistant coach D.J. Looney. He passed away from a heart attack during a team workout. He was 31 years old. He's a former offensive lineman at Mississippi State. And then a former Oklahoma defensive back, Ricky Dixon, who won the Jim Thorpe Award. He's the only Sooner, the first Sooner to do that. 54 years old. He passed away. He had ALS. He was first diagnosed in 2013. So some tough notes along the way there. We've talked about Eve Pons. It's been reported he's coming back. Also, Arizona State guard Remy Martin, he's returning. He was a first-team All-Pac-12 player. There are two players from Gonzaga that are returning, including Corey Kispert, who averaged 13.9 points, four rebounds, shot 44% from three-point range. He's coming back, as is Joel Ayayi. So good news for Gonzaga in that regard. We expect more announcements today, since midnight tonight is the deadline for those to declare what they are going to do. So we shall see. And was mentioned earlier in the show, John Petty from Alabama is coming back. And Vince, that is a big deal for Alabama. I think he is a quality player. That's going to help the Crimson Tide a lot.
Yeah, because they've had a good recruiting class that will be added to Nate Oates' team. And to get Petty back, Jeff Goodman, we mentioned him with the report on Eve Pons. I think he's big on Alabama. I don't know if that was pre-Petty or if he figured if he was figuring on Petty returning, but it's a big get for them. I don't know that they can always play the way they did last year of just jacking up just an insane amount of threes.
Are the Rockets?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought of. Yeah, no doubt. I don't think you can sustain that, Jimmy. But we'll see. They've got talent. If you have talent, you can always adjust your style of play. Sometimes you have to play a different crazy way to compensate for maybe not having an equivalent or close to the level of talent that maybe some others do. But they'll have some dudes on that team next year.
Yeah, I agree. I think that is a good team. Did you see what Matt LaFleur said about Aaron Rodgers?
No, I didn't.
He said that I see Aaron Rodgers here for a long time. Now, how long, I don't think anybody knows. Nothing is guaranteed. I feel lucky to work with him on a daily basis. Okay. nothing's guaranteed. He'll be here a long time, but hey, how long, I don't know. He got ripped pretty good by the ESPN commentators about contradicting himself with that statement. But I I think it's going to be curious to see because I'm still in this camp. I know Green Bay's intent is for Jordan Love to take over. However, unless Jordan Love is the player they think and hope he's going to be, Aaron Rodgers may end up beating him out. And if Aaron Rodgers continues to get in the best end, look, if Jordan Love becomes Josh Rosen, then Aaron Rodgers is going to be at Green Bay for a long time.
Well, the actions of the organization are already telling you that they're eventually going to move on from Aaron Rodgers. So it's still and plus Aaron Rodgers has already spoken in the past tense that he would have wanted to finish his career in Green Bay. So Matt LaFleur saying that now in a Zoom media session. What the organization has done and how Aaron Rodgers feels about it already, that to me is the bigger deal. Unless maybe they find out in practice that, oh, we made a mistake with Jordan Love, and then they decide to ship him to someone that's looking for a young quarterback, maybe they change courses, something like that, then that could open the door for Aaron Rodgers to stay. But if you're going to take a first-round pick on a quarterback, they may have already decided what they're going to do. But so I don't put a ton of stock in LaFleur. LaFleur is trying to get the most out of Aaron Rodgers right now. I don't think Aaron Rodgers is really impacted by that kind of stuff. And he said he called Jordan Love, and you know he's like, hey, they made the decision. That's it. What Matt LaFleur should be doing is getting with his GM to try to improve the wide receiver position. Because not only was it not good enough, they've had a couple of their wide receivers already opt out so for the season. So that's what they should be working on as much as anything else.
We have had it confirmed through a UT official that Pons is returning. So it is official.
Okay.
Not a big surprise. I think it's a good move on his part. I think this makes Tennessee an even stronger team in its effort to be a top 10 caliber team, an SEC championship caliber team, and a Final Four caliber team. When we come back, we've got the sports fix at 6. We're also going to bring you some comments from Philip Fulmer from our interview Friday. And also the interview we have with Archie Manning. We're going to play it again. We've had a great response from that, so just in case you missed it, we're going to play some of that again for you in the 6 o'clock hour. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. You're listening to Sports Talk 99.1, The Sports Animal.